This past week was particularly violent in the Middle East. In Baghdad, a truck bomb attack on United Nations headquarters in Iraq killed at least 20 people, including the top UN official in the country. That same day in Jerusalem, 20 people died in a suicide bombing aboard a bus. Later in the week, the targeted killing by Israel of a Hamas official led to the unraveling of a tenuous two-month-old ceasefire. Walter Russell Mead is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a regular guest on our program, and he's on the line from New York. Hi, Walter.
Hi.
Did things really get worse this past week, or does it just seem so?
Well, I think it's just kind of more of the same, and the bombing of the UN headquarters, I think, was a real catastrophe. It's certainly something that touched people here. One of the people killed was a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, Arthur Helton.
You know, since the end of major fighting in Iraq, U.S. troops have faced attacks virtually every day. But in the past few weeks, with that bombing of the U.N. offices, and earlier this month there was the bombing of the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad, has the focus of opposition to the occupation of Iraq changed?
Well, it looks that way to me, in that these attacks don't seem designed by an intelligence that's trying to unite moderates and all Arabs against the United States. These seem to be the work of extremists that hate the United Nations, hate the Jordanians, hate moderates as much as they hate, or almost as much as they hate us. So it looks like we're entering a different kind of stage where they seem to be trying to polarize society rather than building a united national resistance to the Americans.
There are calls for an increased UN presence in Iraq after this bombing. Does that seem likely?
We have a problem that on the Security Council, you've got some permanent members with a veto, and the name France does come to mind, whose primary goal here seems to be harassing the United States. So my guess is that we're going to see a number of people on the Security Council trying to put poison pills in these resolutions that make it impossible for the U.S. to accept them without looking like they're opposing a greater U.N. presence in Iraq. So I think we still face a very stormy situation at the Security Council.
The roadmap for peace between Israel and the Palestinians seemed to hit a dead end this week. Do you think it can be brought back without a significant return to violence?
Without a significant return to violence, probably. I mean, I think we've had that already, and how long it goes on, I don't know. It's really not clear what's going to happen there. I think that I give the Bush administration points for continuing to try to revive it. The Bush administration had begun to criticize the Israeli government with respect to the wall in the last couple of weeks. And so it seems that there's some people were, on the radical Islamicist side, the Hamas side, were worried that there might actually be a little bit of momentum, and so something needed to happen to stop it. It's a real tangled situation in that also the Palestinian Authority is really caught. The Israelis are saying you have to act like a government, which means you have to be able to suppress terrorists on your territory before we'll treat you as a government. And the Palestinian Authority, some people in it probably don't want to crack down. Others feel they aren't able to crack down on the terrorists before the Israelis and the rest of the world treats them like a government. It's an impasse, and no one really quite knows what to do.
Long-standing alliances have been challenged and shaken over the past year. As you've been watching events unfold, do you see the world order realigning?
In some ways, September 11th and the aftermath were this flash of lightning in a dark sky, and the U.S. and Europe looked at each other in that flash of lightning and realized we were further apart than either one of us had realized. You know, the Europeans, I think, saw themselves becoming more influential in the world and therefore more important to the United States. They were uniting. They had the euro. And it was a real shock to them to find in the aftermath of September 11th, and especially the run-up to the war in Iraq, that at least in the view of the Bush administration, they are not as important as they used to be to us. The Cold War was really about Europe at the end of the day. and American strategic planners and all used to look at anything that happened anywhere in the world and think, how does this affect the balance of forces in Europe? How does this affect our alliances in Europe? These days, American policymakers are more likely to look at something that happens in Europe and think, how does this affect us in the Middle East? So Europe is no longer the prime focus of American interest and concern in the world, and I think that's a difficult transition for them and for us. Oddly, while we've been drawing away rather radically, I think, from France, the U.S. and China seem to be somewhat closer than they were, say, during the Clinton administration, and the U.S.-Russian relationship seems to be about the same. You know, things are changing in the world, and I don't think any of us really know how it's going to come out longer term.
You're working on a book about the concept of the coming apocalypse in foreign relations. Are things really that dire?
With the development of new technology, this, in a way, this goes back, you know, when the atom bomb first came out and at the time of the Holocaust, where you saw two things in history at the same time. You saw absolute evil of a kind that you used to have to sort of read, you know, in fairy tales or in the Bible. Not that I'm comparing the Bible to fairy tales, but, you know, here's a wicked man trying to kill all the Jews just like Pharaoh. And then you have the atom bomb, this incredible capacity for destruction, and for the first time, the possibility that human beings could end human life on Earth. And since the 1940s, we have seen these threats. They're sort of frozen in place for a long time. But in the 21st century, we're getting a proliferation of types of weapons of mass destruction. We're seeing sort of new breakouts of things very like absolute evil, the genocide in Rwanda, some of the other stuff that's going on in sub-Saharan Africa, this Islamicist fanaticism. So the combination of proliferating threats and proliferating weapons is really an electric one, or maybe I should say a nuclear one. And I think more and more we're going to feel that our history and our lives are overshadowed by very frightening possibilities.
Is there no way to rescue hope?
Well, I think you have to hope anyway. I mean, you know, those of us who remember the Cold War, you know, I can certainly remember as a kid having bomb drills during the Cuba Missile Crisis and watching grown-ups who really thought we might be in the middle of a nuclear war. So we've lived with this for a while, and the existence of a threat doesn't mean that the threat is going to happen, is going to materialize. There's still grounds for hope, and I think it becomes more important than ever that we take foreign affairs seriously, and working for peace and working for international understanding is really a matter of life and death.
Walter Russell Mead is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's the author of Special Providence, American Foreign Policy and How It Changed the World. Walter, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.